Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network on this Friday, the 31st of May at 1 p.m. Central Time. And just a word to the wise, there's going to be a special planning meeting, of course. It involves certain people on the alt-right. And the first set of numbers that you need to jot down in regard to locating that particular meeting for those who are in the know on this is 99. 99. I'll explain more about that next week when you get the two other coordinates that will explain exactly where this meeting is going to be held. You already know the date on which it's going to be held. It's a very special planning session given the very, very apocalyptic nature of the situation in which we find ourselves. I'm presently away from my home studio, which is in the process of having an entirely new and more secure system being installed. So I'm in a remote location behind the wheel talking into a special gadget that I have that hopefully will keep me abreast of things with the station through the next hour. Even though I don't yet have the roadmap up, I will have the roadmap up at the show's end so that you can see all the stories that have already been or that will be posted shortly after the show, as well as some additional stories that we'll post after the show is over. Let us begin perhaps with the most important story, and that is what you haven't been told by American mainstream media about Vladimir Putin's most recent statements of some 3.5 minutes that were aimed at the Western world in regard to the whole issue of American nuclear weapons. And in this particular case, he is concerned, obviously, about what seems to be a move toward the importation of nuclear-capable F-16 missiles into Ukraine. He's also, of course, concerned about all of this talk about allowing long-range cruise missiles of the United States and of other Western countries to be launched into continental Russia at the not simply at the behest of one Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine, but keep in mind that the Ukrainians cannot possibly launch these ridiculous missiles on their own, that this is going to require American and Western technicians to engage in what is nothing more than an act of war against Russia and an act of war against Russia within continental Russia, and that in this regard it will be a circumstance where that happens and you can guarantee that there is going to be a third world war. This is a little bit about what this planning operation is going to be that I've alluded to here at the beginning of the broadcast regarding those who have already been invited to an event that is not going to involve cell phones or any kind of electronic devices, certainly, and will involve people who are already in the know as to how to communicate with one another in regard to things that could yet transpire within the last month or less. That's all I'll say about that at this point. But Vladimir Putin's statements to the Western world as a warning are not being reiterated by Western media, which seems to be covering for Joe Biden as well as all of the Ziocons in the Biden administration, as well as in the Republican Party, who seem to want World War III to happen. So this is the most important thing that you can be looking at when the roadmap goes up by the show's end, and that is going to be the Putin address, presumably addressing the American people as well as the American government and all these other Western peoples and their governments about what these Ziocons are in the process of getting us all into. This is something that not simply involves Vladimir Putin's warning of some 3.5 or 4 minutes. It is not shrill. It is measured. It is clear. It is entirely understandable why he's taking the position that he is, because if there is any doubt that the United States and the Western European nations are at war with Russia, this will remove any doubt whatsoever that the original game plan in this situation of overthrowing the Yanukovych regime in Ukraine in February of 2014 would eventually come to this. This is going to be no longer an American and Ziocon surrogate war against Russia using Zelensky. But now that Zelensky and his forces are in the process of being absolutely stomped militarily, where we are talking about weeks, maybe a handful of months before Kiev itself falls, Now the West is openly talking about its most rash policy yet, and that is the whole issue of using American cruise missiles and Western European cruise missiles, nuclear or otherwise, being fired well into continental Russia. What do you think their response is going to be? They have already told us what the response is going to be, coming now from Vladimir Putin himself, as well as all of the other measured warnings up to this point from people like Dmitry Medvedev, that clearly such an act would be met with retaliation. And retaliation officially stated by the Russian government as retaliation against those Western countries whose missiles would be used in such an attack against Russia, as well as retaliation against those Western governments who are providing Western technicians who at this point would be absolute combatants and launching a deep missile strike against continental Russia. We have to ask ourselves about our own government at this point, folks. We know that our own government is comprised of clinically evil people. You could even argue people who are demonically possessed, for those of you who believe in that sort of thing theologically, at least as the New Testament describes it. At this particular point, I have to conclude that there is such a demonic spirit working in this, that these folks that are our leaders, our consultants, the heads of our NGOs, and all the rest of these people are absolutely nuts. Nobody in their right mind could possibly believe that this could end up in anything other than a major global conflict that is not only immoral and evil and will kill potentially millions of innocent people, but that the people who are the aggressors, the people who have started this, the people who are absolutely crazy to think that they can finish it, involve these Zionists and neoconservatives in the American government and in these Western EU and NATO governments that are about to allow this thing to happen. But make no mistake about it, if you want to talk about a conspiracy, there is a conspiracy of silence in Western media, especially in Britain and the United States, in regard to allowing this Vladimir Putin warning, this video, to be aired on our news stations, our mainstream news stations. And in this regard, you will be able to see this for yourself when you get into the RBN roadmap for this show shortly after the broadcast. I have been incredibly busy with all kinds of things that I won't get into in detail, except to say that, you know, I've had another illness in my family. I'm in the middle of a house rehabilitation, which has all kinds of complications connected with it. I'm in a circumstance where the other people that I work for, VT Foreign Policy, are occasionally having their site tampered with in ways that I'm sure our people at RBN are well-nigh familiar with, because, folks, things are in the process of happening. If all of a sudden you're experiencing some strange things with your cell phones as you read something like my articles on VT Foreign Policy, if you're having trouble from time to time with the usual quality level of reception that you would receive from the Republic Broadcasting Network or several of the other better alt-right stations, there's a reason for it. It's not coincidence. Things are beginning to transpire. In that regard, one thing that will be in your roadmap for this show, and it's best read after you watch the Putin video. I think I've listed it right underneath the Putin video that will appear in your roadmap just minutes after this broadcast concludes. There is a gentleman by the name of Dmitry Suslov, who is very, very powerfully connected within the Russian foreign policy establishment. And among other things, he belongs to something called the Valdai Club, which is listed in his biography at Russia Today. He has written an English language story, which came out right after the Putin broadcast, which basically overtly underscores the fact that the West has such incredible collective historical amnesia that maybe it needs to see, and I am quoting him now, you can read this article for yourself after the show is over, maybe the Western world needs to see a mushroom cloud in order to get the message that Russia is not bluffing in this situation. Their president is not bluffing. Mr. Medvedev is not bluffing. These Russian generals at the highest level of the strategic end of the nuclear enterprise are not bluffing, and that there are active tactical nuclear drills being conducted by Russia right now. And the implication is that that's just for openers. If those F-16s should be introduced into Ukraine, Mr. Medvedev has already made it clear that the Russian military establishment and its political powers with it understand that those F-16s are nuclear capable. Those F-16s will be taken out immediately. And one suspects on the basis of these public statements that that may well involve tactical nuclear weapons. In this particular case, one of the interesting things to follow is this whole issue of airstrikes. South Front has been conducting a series of articles with all kinds of videos and explanations of the comprehensive character of these Russian airstrikes throughout the country. And there's one particular location, and I'm trying to remember the name of this town. It's kind of in central Ukraine. I don't have my computer studio screen in front of me. I think the name of the town is Stavromayorsk. You can check my memory on that after the show is completed. But the long and the short of it is this particular base is thought to be the absolute location selected by American and Western military intelligence for the location of these F-16s. Folks, the Russians are bombing that airstrip and that base into the Stone Age. So at this particular point, that's the point of all of this, that the Russians are already making all of the preparations that they need to make to preempt the possibility of even the introduction of those F-16s. The other part of it is, of course, that they are ready to go from not simply using hypersonic missiles in FAB 500 and FAB 1000 and FAB 1500 guided bombs with incredible explosive power. But they would be prepared, based upon their own public statements, to utilize tactical nuclear weapons if the West insists on introducing into Ukraine American and Western aircraft that are nuclear capable of striking Russia from the vantage point of Ukraine. The other thing, of course, that we need to emphasize is that this has all come about as a result of a series of things that we have discussed on this show from time to time over these last 2 years of this conflict, and that is the number of times that the United States in particular and the British leadership secondarily and the Western political leadership generally have lied in regard to their negotiating stance that would have prevented this war from ever happening. Had the United States and the Western powers kept their word in regard to the Minsk I and Minsk II accords, certainly if the United States and the Western powers, speaking specifically of Joe Biden and Boris Johnson in this case, if they had kept their word in regard to the settlement tentatively reached in Istanbul right after the war started, we would have had a settlement that would have produced peace in that region. We would have had a settlement in that situation that would have produced a cessation of any talk about the introduction of Western military-oriented biological laboratories in Ukraine, which have already existed there and in many cases have been wiped out by airstrikes. We would be talking about a situation where there would be a cessation of conventional military conflict, a conflict that Ukraine cannot possibly win. And then, of course, at this particular juncture, we would be not talking about the very real possibility of a tactical nuclear war, a defensive tactical nuclear war launched by Russia against a Western consortium that will not take the defeat that they have earned and take their medicine like men and women. Let me give you an example of this, and then I think you'll see where I'm coming from. Take a look at places like the Duran and South Front, Brian Berletic's new Atlas program on YouTube, Military Summary Channel, the various things that Scott Ritter and Larry Johnson are putting out for you with all of their professional backgrounds. No one now doubts, including the British media, that the Zelensky regime has had it, that the Ukrainians have had it militarily. If you take a look at these maps of these airstrikes, if you take a look at this 1,200-kilometer-long line of conflict between Russia and Ukraine, the basic summary is this. The Ukrainians are stretched thin in contrast to these fake casualty figures that you've been hearing about from Zelensky and from American mainstream media. Colonel Douglas McGregor has already confirmed that in terms of dead and wounded, that where the Ukrainians are concerned, that you're talking about 500,000 men. That's a little bit different from Vladimir Zelensky's claim of 31,000 casualties on the Ukrainian side. Take a look at what has happened just since this ludicrous counteroffensive was launched by Ukraine almost exactly 1 year ago. Oh, there were some 180,000 Ukrainians killed in that one, not to mention the incredible success of this Russian war of attrition. Our friend Mercurius at the Duran calls an aggressive war of attrition. It's producing all kinds of Ukrainian casualties, catastrophic numbers of Ukrainian casualties. But when you start looking at the fact that Ukraine's Air Force has been completely destroyed, start looking at the numbers of losses in terms of armor of all kinds, Bradleys, Abrams tanks, all kinds of losses when it comes to 150-millimeter artillery cannons. Look at the incredible ammunition shortage that is occurring with the Ukrainians because their Western backers don't have the productive capability, industrially so, that we're now discovering that the Russians do have. There were recently some statistics that came out on this that have been confirmed by all of the sources that I consult before I get on the air with you. The Russians right now are capable of and are producing approximately 4.5 million 155-millimeter artillery shells. How many are being produced by the West? Well, in terms of their so-called kick-in, in terms of possible war production, that figure is somewhere between 700,000 and 800,000 compared to 4.5 million, compared to a Ukrainian military force that is shooting up this artillery ammunition like it was popcorn at the movie theater, even as they are losing and losing comprehensively. So in this particular case, the side that has all of the air cover, the side that has the complete advantage in artillery pieces, that has a absolute air supremacy, not simply with things like the MiG-31s and the TUM-3s and all the rest of it, but look at what is happening with Russian drones and what is happening with the percentage of shootdowns in regard to the Ukrainian drones that have been given to them by the West or have been put together on a cockeyed basis right there in the Ukrainian field. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Statistics don't lie, and these films don't lie either. Films from outlets like South Front that are being corroborated by responsible Western sources that are not Putin agents, that are simply committed to telling the American people and the Western European community how badly their own leadership has bungled and how badly it is that Mr. Zelensky and his army, engaging an air force that is no longer in existence, and his fledgling navy are failing in regard to defeating the largest country on Earth geographically with an incredible advantage over the United States, just for openers, in population and with the military industrial production capacity that the United States led the world in World War II, even as it does not lead the world in this category now, either with Russia or, even more importantly, with China. as Russia and China are clearly working with Iran in regard to getting all of their various ducks in a row, shall we say, before the advent of the of a really, really serious global conflict. So this is basically where we are in this. Check those numbers again, and you'll discover exactly what has been said time and again by the sources that I have cited, and that is that this Russian war of aggressive attrition, at least when it finally got going in regard to what Russia did need to commit to in terms of its own military manpower, that once that initial mistake was corrected, the initial mistake that the Russians assumed, where they assumed that a certain level of manpower, primarily from the Lugansk and Donetsk People's Republics, would be sufficient for this so-called special military operation. And that was a key mistake on Putin's part that he has publicly admitted. But now that he understands what he's dealing with, make no mistake about it, this mistake is not going to be made again. Let's take a look at those Russian figures as it regards this whole issue of manpower. We are told, and the statements of the Russian Defense Ministry are being corroborated by some of these Western sources that I've just cited, Russia has approximately 500,000 men under arms in Ukraine as I speak. That's number one. Number two is this. Russia has, according to their own Ministry of Defense, and this again has been corroborated by some of these Western sources that I consult, another 300,000 men under arms right now. What are they going to do with these people? It would appear that they are planning a much wider northern offensive. It is their desire, of course, to gain control of Kupiansk. It is their desire to regain control of the entirety of the Kharkiv region. But in this particular case, it is believed that the supplementation of this already successful northern offensive with another 300,000 men is going to achieve at least three things. The Russian takeover of Sumy, the Russian takeover of this salient that they have been working on since this war started, and that is the Slaviansk Kramatorsk salient, the conurbation there. The Slaviansk Kramatorsk conurbation, once that falls, it is all over, folks. And this supplementation of their considerable 500,000 man force in Ukraine at this juncture by another 300,000 people is not only going to enable them to achieve the takeover of Sumy and the takeover of Kupiansk and the successful takeover of the Slaviansk Kramatorsk salient, but of course the Russians are already in the process of solidifying their takeover of Avdiivka and points west and northwest of Avdiivka. It's just a matter of time until Chasiv Yar falls completely. And at this particular point, the Ukrainians are being stretched in terms of manpower to the breaking point. They are presently taking all of the forces that they at one time had committed to the Zaporozhye region as a means of this launching the so-called counteroffensive of a year ago. Those remaining forces in that region are being cannibalized and sent to points north. Budanov's GUR, his main intelligence directorate, is now having to supply manpower itself in regard to all these leaks in the dam in the north. This tells you just how bad the situation is in terms of manpower. And it is estimated by, again, numerous official Russian sources, and the corroboration of this on the part of the Western sources that I cite for you every week, that the Ukrainians are now losing an average of 1,200 men a day. Start looking at that, just multiply it by 30, and that'll give you the monthly losses of a Ukrainian military that has absolutely had it, that has no further manpower base to rely upon, and where, again, and I will emphasize this again and again, Russian industrial military production is outstripping the United States and the West in any conceivable department you care to name. And so in this regard, it's exactly what Mercurius over at the Duran was saying happened in the American Civil War, the war between the states. Whatever you think of that war and how it got started, whatever you really think of Abe Lincoln and all the rest of that, is irrelevant to the fact that the side that had the advantage in manpower, the side that had the advantage in production, industrial production capacity, was ultimately going to win that war. Now, of course, the war between the states lasted until 1865. It went on for, what, approximately 4 years? But in the final analysis, when the end came, it was swift. It was swift because you had a situation where the South was operating on a shoestring in regard to available manpower. They were being outproduced by the industrial economy of the North, and that led to a situation where the end came, the roof simply collapsed. Fast forward now to what we're talking about in 21st century Donbass, what we're talking about in terms of 21st century Ukraine generally. We are awakening to new realities. And the new reality, the Russians had the absolute advantage in manpower. They had the absolute advantage in terms of industrial military capacity and capability. And in this regard, their war of aggressive attrition, going back to my old pal Karl von Clausewitz of Prussia, is winning, just as von Clausewitz would have predicted were he around today to be on some of these talk shows. So all this faulty roll that you've been hearing from CNN and the New York Times and MSNBC and all these other folks about, well, the Russians aren't gaining any territory and this thing is a stalemate. It was never a stalemate once the Russians decided to commit to the manpower, their own manpower, that would have decided this thing well before now. Once they had the people on the ground that they decided that they were going to have to commit because the West was not negotiating in good faith, hence the Minsk falsehoods, hence the Istanbul fraud, the Nord Stream pipeline attacks, the assassination of Dugin's daughter in Moscow and all the rest of it. Once the completely evil character of this became apparent to Putin, from that time on forward, the Russians cranked it up and with the capabilities that they just naturally possess vis-a-vis the country of Ukraine, and this thing is now all over. We'll come back after the break and discuss the fact of the matter, which is that Joe Biden may be risking your lives in a world war to save his own a double slash in regard to the November elections. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Make the world go away.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Get More Tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Make the world go away and get off my shoulders.
She's back.
Say the things you used to say and make the world go away. Do you remember?
I need to
drive. You love me before the world took me astray. If you do, then forgive me and make the world go away. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away. I'm sorry if I hurt you.
We are back. You are listening to the Dankoff Report on the Republic Broadcasting Network live on this May 31st, 2024, as we seem to be approaching an end game in terms of the American elections, and as well with international circumstances that suggest that biblical apocalypse might be well around the corner. You know what has always struck me about this is obviously, some of you know I'm a retired Lutheran pastor. I went to a legitimate graduate school, trying to finish one last legitimate theological degree from Westminster, an offshoot of Princeton. And eschatology, of course, has been one of the things that I have studied at the graduate level, dealing with the original language of Greek and all the rest of it. But how many secular commentators I respect are beginning to think in apocalyptic terms? It's one thing that I've been reporting this sort of thing for RBN for some considerable period of time, but the most alarming thing is not what Mark Nankoff happens to think on these issues, however valid my views may happen to be, but what really matters now is that people that are not necessarily at all where I am theologically, but who are reputable thinkers in the secular, political, and military and economic realms are having all kinds of draconian thoughts about where this is headed. So that's perhaps the thought of the day here as we move forward. One of the other things I was going to mention in regard to this whole business of the Russian-Ukrainian war, we're going to have some links up from South Front that deal with how curious it is that matters related to LGBTQ and pedophilia are making their way into the Western appeals to their own peoples to support whatever it is that the West thinks it's going to do in opposing Putin in Ukraine. Sound like that's extreme stuff? Sound like that's distorted stuff? Sounds like that's crazy talk? It's certainly crazy talk, but it's absolutely true. And I want you to take a look at those links at some point this week that'll be up there for RBN to publish with this broadcast, probably within 10 minutes of the conclusion of the show. In that regard, what is going on with Donald Trump? I'll simply say two things, folks. Donald Trump, and this article is found on our own RBN news page. Donald Trump has openly talked about the imposition of the death penalty for quote-unquote anti-Semitism. Mr. Trump, what is anti-Semitism? What is the definition of anti-Semitism that you're using? And are you supporting the definition of anti-Semitism of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith and this so-called Anti-Semitism Review Act that has at least passed the American House of Representatives? Because if so, you're going to have to put to death millions of Americans who, in fact, believe in the biblical narrative about who was behind the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Pretty clearly just stated there, both in the gospel accounts as well as in the epistles. And, of course, the eschatology, such as we have it with the book of Jude, and the book of Revelation, and other things, would suggest that your definition of anti-Semitism includes people who believe in the basic narrative of the New Testament. I would suggest to Mr. Trump that he think very carefully about what it is that he is advocating here and maybe getting his head screwed on straight. We already know that Joe Biden is clinically out of his mind. Trump keeps making statements like this. Perhaps we might consider that he is of similarly troubled emotional and mental state. Paul Craig Roberts, I think, would agree with that. We have a post up there from Paul Craig Roberts basically discussing what Pravda has already noted in their English language news site, and I have included that link for your roadmap. It'll post, at probably 2:10 Central Time. This issue of Trump telling his supporters that if he is elected as president this November, that he is ready and willing to bomb Moscow and Beijing. Let's follow that story. Paul Craig Roberts was absolutely dumbfounded that Trump would make these kinds of statements. These are so absolutely irresponsible that in this particular case, I'm willing to ask for some kind of verification on this. Did Trump really say this? If he did, folks, what are we thinking about with two lunatics running on the major party platforms and tickets for the presidency of the United States this November, even as we get closer and closer and closer to a global third world war? Keep an eye on those Trump stories, both in regard to his advocacy of the death penalty for quote-unquote anti-Semitism, as well as his apparently verifiable, I want some additional verification on this, if someone could send it to me, that he actually was telling his supporters that if he were elected president again, that he would be about the business of being ready to bomb Moscow and Beijing. Is he crazy? I'll leave it to you to evaluate for yourself whether or not you would want in the White House someone who would make public statements like this and who had such luminaries as Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo and John Bolton in his previous administration. Sounds like his previous administration was being run out of Tel Aviv to me in regard to his foreign policy. Which leads us to something else that's in the roadmap that will be published some 10 minutes after this show concludes. Nikki Haley. Did you catch her act, folks, in autographing shells to be used by Israel against defenseless Palestinians and defenseless civilians in Gaza? She has basically autographed at least one of these shells, if not more, with a message with her under her own signature, and she was quite willing to be photographed while doing this, basically having these messages that were designed to give her special imprimatur and blessing to the utilization of these shells against defenseless Palestinians in what any reasonable person would define as genocide. This is the most idiotic thing that this woman has done yet, which takes some doing based upon past things that she has done and said. And when she was doing these things, the question again is raised, how many people in a pro-Zionist Republican Party, including right here in the state of Texas, believe this sort of thing? Folks, you take a look at the Texas GOP party platform. It hasn't changed since I was working for Pat Buchanan on a volunteer basis in 1992 and 1996 here in Texas. And I was a delegate to a couple of GOP state conventions, including the one in 96, where I was promised an at-large seat to the Republican National Convention's presidential gala that year in San Diego if I would agree to vote for Bob Dole. Thanks, but no thanks. I think I'll stay home. And I did stay home. And people could not believe, people who knew that this was being extended to me could not believe that I said no thanks. But there comes a time when you have to live with yourself. And there was no way that I was voting for a candidate who was a walking repudiation of so much of what was in his own party platform that year. Except you can be sure that a Dole candidacy, much like the King George candidacies, much like Reagan's candidacy, folks, we've got to be honest about this. Looking back on that, he was absolutely faithful to the Zionist cause at every level, and several articles on this in the UNTS Review in recent years, that we now reach a point to where a Republican presidential candidate, whose candidacy, of course, has floundered now, thankfully, is autographing shells to be used against defenseless civilians in a war where the state of Israel is getting close to having murdered 40,000 civilians, close to 40,000, along with some 70% of those people being women and children. Take a look at the number of folks who have already been displaced by this latest genocidal action launched by the Israeli government. It becomes very clear that the issue in Israel all along has had nothing to do with Hamas. It has everything to do with continuing to liquidate the Palestinian population that will not allow itself to be forcibly displaced. And lest we forget, it was one Donald Trump who signed off on the United States moving its embassy to East Jerusalem in defiance of international law. This tells you everything you need to know as we reach a point now where Mr. Trump, of course, will undoubtedly sign off on anything that Netanyahu should want if he is reelected, meaning Mr. Trump. And we're hearing some very bellicose things after coming from Donald Trump in regard to sounding about as idiotic on this Russian-Ukrainian situation in our present conflict, a diplomatic conflict with China. This is all bad news, folks. And it's leading up to one thing, and that is that we may well find ourselves within the next year, maybe the next 2 years, in a circumstance where there is going to be a war that involves the United States against Russia, China, and Iran. Think on that one with what we have already discussed just in terms of the Russian-Ukrainian theater alone. Think again of this whole issue of population. Think in terms of military industrial production capability, and you'll see very quickly that the United States absolutely has no chance to quote unquote win such a war. It would have every chance of being a party to the ignition of something that is absolutely preventable, that is going to kill millions of people, and that could conceivably end life on this planet as we have known it. And again, if you think that this is someone mired in biblical eschatology who is saying this, you're correct at that level. But look at all the secular political minds out there, the reputable ones, who are not warmongers and who can think. And they're all looking at it in the same way that I am in regard to where this whole business is headed. So Nikki Haley is just the latest lunatic to sign on to this kind of extremism. This isn't even extremism. This is just this is psychosis, potentially a demonically induced psychosis that this lady suffers from, and that the political leadership of both of the major political parties in this country is imbued with as well. Questions here. We'll go back to something that I wanted to emphasize that is the lead story of what will be your roadmap in some 20 minutes from now. And that's something authored by yours truly for Memorial Day. I wrote this for VT Foreign Policy. Had some 600 hits in the first 12 hours it was up, followed by a lot of hacking where I'm hearing from people worldwide that somebody is playing around with the VT Foreign Policy website in regard to making people prove that they're not robots in order to even take a look at the story. Therefore, I have posted it for RBN in the roadmap that is to come under the Mark Dankoff's Catacomb site. It is entitled this, Mark Dankoff for Memorial Day 2024. It goes on to say, a prophet rejected in Iowa and the death of Lieutenant Lyle Jensen. This particular case, Lyle M. Jensen. There were two Lieutenant Lyle Jensens who lost their lives in the Second World War. One was an aviator from Nebraska. That is Lieutenant Lyle R. Jensen. Lyle Jensen from my parents' hometown of Hamburg, Iowa, who was killed in Italy on October the 2nd, 1943, is Lyle M. Jensen. That particular piece I want all of you to read because it not only gives you an incredible history and context as to what the failure to heed Charles Lindbergh's warning issued in Des Moines, Iowa in September of 1941, what that would lead to less than 3 months later in terms of FDR's arrangements for the Pearl Harbor that came on December 7th. I want you to see, when you read that story, what the cost was just for small town America alone. After FDR got his arranged war that he had been working on at least since October of 1940 with the so-called McCollum Memorandum that is available, by the way, through Freedom of Information Act. If you read Day of Deceit by Robert Stinnett, you will see that document reproduced for you. But at any rate, when you read my story at Mark Dankoff's Catacomb, with a link to the VT Foreign Policy story, the original, if in fact you can access it there, you'll see that small town America paid a price as a result of what FDR was up to that put the United States in a situation that it did not have to be in diplomatically or militarily. And so I say, at the behest of whom? There is a link in my article to Charles Lindbergh's filmed 1941 speech in Des Moines, Iowa, that will tell you what he saw as the main forces behind the coming war, unless the American people decided to put FDR and his machinations out of business. At this particular point, Lindbergh has proven absolutely prophetic, not simply in terms of what he said in September of 1941, but the implications of his words now, as we are talking about globalist Zionist lunatics who have hijacked the American government and the American media and the American educational institutions and American major urban police forces that have been trained by Israelis fusion centers being run by the investigative agencies of the federal government of this country in conjunction with the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Check out that particular subject and you'll see just how comprehensively evil all of this is. But nonetheless, when you are looking at this and go back to this Lieutenant Lyle M. Jensen story that I penned for Memorial Day, we have to ask ourselves, what does that situation tell us in regard to where we are now? This really hit me some days ago. I was either the 11th or 12th of May when I was invited to a party for a young man in the community. It was a party that involved a send-off for him as he was leaving for the United States Marine Corps on Mother's Day. Now, the minute I heard about this party, and of course I RSVP'd and agreed to come to the party, bring the kid a nice gift and so forth, it brought me back to my memories of what I had heard about the Lyle Jensen situation that I subsequently learned more about through some intensive digging. I found things on Jensen in American archives that I could only access through the Russian Yandex search engine. Think about that one for a minute. But then secondarily, think about the implications of what this war meant for a town like Hamburg, Iowa, from 1941 onward. Hamburg, Iowa, in 1938, which was the year Lyle M. Jensen, Lieutenant Lyle M. Jensen, graduated from high school with my parents. 1938, Hamburg, Iowa had a population of 2,100 people. It survived the Depression simply because it was an agricultural community that at the same time had a railroad between Kansas City and Omaha running next to the town. But Hamburg, Iowa today has had a major loss of family farms. It has declined from a population of 2,100 to a population of some 850 or 870 people. It is a town that is struggling economically. It is a town that, if we get into another world war, will have its remaining youth undoubtedly conscripted for that effort. What is it going to mean for that community and for your communities if we make the same mistake in 2024 with the leadership of the same cabal that was driving us to war on behalf of the constituencies that Lindbergh cited in Des Moines in September of 1941, we make this mistake again, we are talking about a simple fact, and it's this. When the war broke out for the United States on December the 7th, 1941, there was no power in the world yet that possessed a nuclear weapon. I want you to think about that very carefully because, of course, it was in August of 1945. Whether you agree with the decision or not, and it's one of the very debatable points in history as we now understand things about the decision-making process of Truman dropping those bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima that we weren't told about, at least when I was in school. I'm guessing the same thing is true of you as well. But aside from that whole debate, World War II ended with the United States as the sole atomic/nuclear power in the world. That's no longer the case. So when we start talking about allowing these same neoconservative Zionist agents to launch a third world war for whatever benefit they think they're going to derive from such deranged policy, our major opponents will be Russia and China. They are fully nuclearized powers. They have very, very fine conventional militaries. The Russian one in particular continues to improve with all of the practice that it's been getting in the Ukraine. And as it's just now kind of getting up to speed in terms of capabilities that are there that are now being fully developed and in the process of being deployed. You think about the Iranians and the advancements of the Iranians militarily and in terms of overall technology since the end of the Pahlavi regime in early 1979. My father was a part of that in the final years of that government in regard to working for Lockheed. But now we're looking at an Iran that has all kinds of incredible military capabilities that, in conjunction with what is clearly a developing trade and political and economic and military alliance with Russia and China, is going to be a very, very formidable opponent. To where what we are talking about here is what Alexander Dugin describes as not multiculturalism, which is the thing in the West, which has been eating away at Western culture and Western solidarity and Western demographics for a very long period of time. We are now talking about what the Russians understand to be multipolarity. That's a word, multipolarity, which means that the United States is not only not the power it once was, it does not have the monolithic control of world economies or world militaries or foreign policy generally in developing countries that it thought it had at the end of the so-called Cold War. The fact is that the United States is dealing with powers that in some respects are superseding the United States with both military capabilities as well as industrial productive capabilities, and where the U.S. is sporting a central government that has produced a level of blowback against American foreign policy that is causing the dollar to be shrinking in influence globally. De-dollarization leads to the end of the American empire. The United States will be going into a third world war with a declining economy, a dying dollar, and with military forces to oppose it that it could not have imagined at any time in its history. Take a look at all the stories that will be up there on the big board for you within 10 minutes of the conclusion of this show. Take a look especially at my op-ed on Lieutenant Lyle M. Jensen of Hamburg, Iowa, as a prelude to all of the other things that are so important for you to look at this week, including the Putin taping and the Dmitry Suslov article on nuclear dangers for Russia today. You've been listening to Mark Dankoff from the Republic Broadcasting Network from San Antonio. See you next week.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.